these policies aren't just for students, right? Like, I want to fight for those folks that just feel like their voices haven't been heard. And I think increasingly you're starting to see that in the town of Normal.
PodBN.
Elections Edition.
Here we go from the Play Normal Esports Studio. This is PodBN. I am Tyson, and subbing in today is Zach Dietmeyer.
Hey, everybody.
Today's guest is Alex Campbell, who's running for Normal Town Council. We're going to talk to him today about what is leading him to run for council and what his platform is. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, Lil Beaver Brewery, over on Currency Drive. You know, that area used to just be a whole bunch of warehouses and buildings that weren't really used for anything, weeds growing in the parking lot. Lil Beaver's come down there and built out that facility to be a really impressive facility. It helps out the surrounding businesses. It's also encouraged some other businesses to move down there, and they're doing great things for the local economy. And they also have some great beer. So please go and visit them or go pick up some of their beverages at places like Binny's and Hy-Vee. And with that, we will start our conversation with Alex. Hi, Alex. How are you doing today?
Doing well. How about yourself?
Good. First, let's just start off with a little bit of your background. Are you from town?
I'm not. I'm actually, I wasn't even born in America. I was born in Romania. I was adopted like very early on. Lived most of my life in the Chicago suburbs area. So I'm from Aurora. So just a little bit under 2 hours away from here. But like most folks in the area, moved here for school 3 years ago. It was an amazing decision.
Well, what brought you down to Illinois State?
So actually, my mom went to school here. She's an alum. And I kind of grew up in, like, high school and, like, deciding, you know, through the college process. I was like, I don't want to go where my mom went. I was really against it. The first two trips that I took to, like, start investigating colleges was Indiana University. And the very next day I went to ISU. So it was a really busy weekend, and I went to Indiana, and you know, they have a great, I'm a business major, they had a great business school, and I was really into it. And then I came to ISU and I took the tour, and I was like, wow, I get why she went here. And especially with the improvements that they've made, like, to Uptown, and it's such a vibrant place, especially compared to, like, when my mom went here. It really got me the tour, and I had to kind of eat my words and tell my mom that, you know, you were right, it is a great place. So that kind of killed my ego a little bit, but I mean, she was right, it is a great school, and I'm glad I chose to come here.
So I've heard that from some people. Joel Studebaker, who's also running for Normal Town Council, he had a similar thing where he was like, I just don't want to go to ISU, and then it kind of won him over. Why do you think ISU has that impression outside of the area?
I think part of it is the past few decades, maybe 2-3 decades, it's really been improving in terms of, like, stance and education. So overall, it's just made leaps and bounds in terms of, like, the professors they've been able to bring in, the research that's been done at the school, and just overall it's, like, improved in terms of, like, national standings. It just came out again, pretty high in the rankings, top 100 public school. It's just, like, really moved up and become, like, an impressive and prestigious school. And I think that's really helped, as well as, like, some of the, like, the development is a big key too, right? Like, Uptown is a draw to folks. To me also, it sort of depends on the student, but to me, the small atmosphere, so, I mean, it's a mid-sized school, but the fact that, like, the quad is so compact really meant a lot to me, because I knew I didn't really want to go, like, south, but I do hate the cold. So the fact that, you know, your biggest walk, if you're on campus, is you know, maybe 20, 25 minutes if you live kind of far off campus, that's an enticing thing. You know what I mean? I had a lot of friends that, you know, went to bigger schools, and their university walks they're huge. They're 30 minutes, or they're taking buses. And that's just, like, a big convenience thing that I think is really convenient to students, especially if they're from the Midwest. Just that small, compact campus is really ideal.
And in a week like this where we're having record low temperatures, that's a big selling point for students that have to walk maybe 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely it is.
Thinking back to you talking about your business experience, and again, one of those things that's really improved over the last 10, 15 years is the business school at ISU. So what was it that really drew you in about ISU's College of Business?
I think that there's just a lot of, when you look at it, there's a lot of employment opportunities. You have big companies like Country Financial and obviously State Farm. I'm not in the insurance realm, but like obviously they do hiring, and I'm a marketing major, so they do hiring and marketing. You just see a lot of opportunities there, and you just see like I've been saying, year after year, they've kind of like improved, especially with their marketing program. It's one of their most like expansive business programs. It's just really been improving like leaps and bounds, and they've added different like sequences now, so you can sort of specialize in like an advertising or an analytics field. And being able to get that like certification and that specialization in a certain sequence was really enticing to me, because that makes me more employable. If I have a certain generalized field, or a specific field rather than a generalized field, I have a more specific set of knowledge that I can apply to really whatever it is I want to do.
Yeah, it's a really nice building. They were building that when I went to ISU. And I have to admit, I was a bit jealous. As a math and philosophy major, so I was in Stevenson the whole time. We still had chalkboards. But I could understand why that building is a nice draw, and the program that it represents too. That's something that, as an alum of ISU, I do feel like it gets a rough go, because there's so many strong programs, like the music program, the nursing program, the actuarial science program is nationally ranked. I'm an actuary, so I pay attention to that. Mm-hmm. Business. So there was a phrase when I went there that ISU stood for "I screwed up," but I think that you could do a lot worse than going to ISU then. So I'm glad you had that experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's sort of like the reputation I think that the school had when my mom went, which is sort of what played into that connotation that I had behind it. But you're right, it is ever improving. And I think when I got here too, I sort of realized, like, everyone knows really across the state and nationally about their education program, obviously. Mm-hmm. It is incredible. But you sort of get here and realize that it's way beyond that too. Like you mentioned the school of nursing, like I'm starting to have friends in the nursing program and meeting folks, and that nursing program is insane in terms of the requirements that you have to have, the GPA you have to keep. It's really competitive compared to a lot of other schools, and I feel like there's just, like you're saying, there's programs that aren't really talked about, because you have the College of Education that's talked about a lot, and now the College of Business, now that State Farm's built the State Farm Hall of Business there. But it is just overall like it's a great school, and they've just been expanding like exponentially in terms of like majors that they offer and how great the programs are.
You talk about spending time at ISU. You've been there. This is your third year, is what you mentioned to us. How did you get involved in student government? I know it's an area that that you've been involved in. How did you get deeper involved in the college level?
Sure. So I was pretty involved in high school. I just loved like spending time. I wrestled for my first few years. I had some injuries and I like stopped that, but I knew that I didn't want all that free time. So I immediately started doing things like business clubs and organizations. I did like DECA and Business Professionals of America. I did, I loved politics growing up in the high school areas, really, when I got into it. So I did things like Modern United Nations, Youth in Government. I just like spent my time elsewhere once I sort of stopped playing sports and stuff like that. And so coming into college, I knew that being heavily involved was something that I really wanted to do. My freshman year was real rough, because it's hard as a freshman to sort of like find a couple things to like sink your teeth in. I know it's hard for a lot of students, and I'm sure people have experienced the same thing because they've expressed it to me, but it's sort of weird because like where you came from wasn't home if you came from a different area, and like ISU isn't necessarily your home your freshman year, so it was just like really hard to adjust. But I started this program called the Emerging Leaders Program, which is something that the student government puts on for to like mentor freshman students and sort of show them organizations to get involved in, what can you do on campus, how to like be an involved ISU student. So through that, I met a group the University Program Board, they do all, like, college programming, stuff like that. They have a wide umbrella of, like, sort of events and stuff that they plan. But as a marketing major, they had a marketing chair. So that was my first, like, college involvement. So my freshman year, I was elected to their board. All sophomore year, I was heavily involved in that. And actually, my freshman year, I ran for student government. But as a freshman, I did not have the network required, really, to win an election. Lessons learned for later. But yeah, so I ran, and I was interested in student government, but I really made a lot of connections through my position on the university program board. I met a lot of people, a lot of faculty, and through those connections, I was able to build a bigger network. I was appointed to an open position on the Student Government Association my sophomore year as off-campus senator. Basically, like, three-quarters of the way, or with three-quarters left of my second semester of my sophomore year, and then won an election, and then an internal election to be president of the assembly, which is essentially, like, their speaker of the House. So I've spent this past year being, like, the head of the legislative branch, essentially, so handling all legislation, handling all of the assembly members, making sure initiatives are being pushed forward, and those are just two of the things that I do on campus that have just super, like, changed my life. I'm super glad I got involved in them, and it's just been super beneficial for me throughout my 3 years here.
So. Obviously, with politics being an issue or an interest for you, was political science ever a consideration, or does that become more of a consideration for you the longer you're involved?
That's a great question. So I actually... So my freshman year here was the fall of 2016. So obviously an extremely politically engaged time in America, a lot of political discourse or lack thereof, depending on how you sort of see that. But, you know, national politics was the thing. So I considered changing my major that semester. I was in a politics course, and I was just really amped up. But I did not do that. I restrained myself from an impulse decision of changing the next four plus years of my life. But I am a politics minor. So originally, my goal sort of was, the idea was get a marketing degree, sort of, excuse me. Maybe go into advertising and that sort of marketing arena, and then use, like, political science in my minor, that sort of knowledge, to maybe be a campaign advisor or political strategist, because I think a lot of times people don't really see it as, like, selling candidates. So I wanted to sort of approach politics from that sort of numbers analytic area and, like, targeting certain groups, and that's what really interests me. But yeah, that definitely came about, you know, that time in America, that political environment and climate was really instrumental in, like, shaping basically the next 3 years of my life and my education. But yeah, I'm a political science minor. So,
So if we go back real quick to the student government. I'll admit I never paid attention to the structure of it while I was there. Probably one of few ISU students who didn't. So, just kidding. But. So I'm curious as a structure, though. You say there's a separate, like, Senate. There's, like, divided government in the student government, ISU.
Sure. How's that structured? It's a really interesting structure. So ISU is one of a few unique universities that has a shared governance policy, which means that basically the faculty and administration share governance with students. The Student Government Association itself, the SGA, as it's known on ISU's campus, is sort of broken down into proportionate representation. So I myself was elected by the student body as an off-campus senator, so only off-campus students could have voted for me. So there are five others in addition to me that represent roughly 12 to 13,000 off-campus students.
Those are people who don't live in the dorms.
Right, anyone that does not live in university housing. So that's the dorms as well as the fairly new Cardinal Court complex.
Okay.
And that would also exclude folks now that there's a new university housing project on that table. I would exclude those folks as well.
Okay.
So yeah, I represent anyone that doesn't live in those university housing complexes. There's one representative for each college. So, like, I have someone represents me as a College of Business student. There's one for each of those colleges. There's four student life senators, which have to do with representing registered student organizations, athletics, those sort of, like, I guess you could say interest groups, or just groups that aren't organized by athletic or academic or major. It's just sort of an interesting breakdown in terms of trying to represent all students. There's also on-campus senators to represent those folks that myself and the rest of the off-campus senators don't represent. So it's broken down like that. And then everyone that is elected as a senator also sits on what's called our academic senate. So that's sort of the shared governance side is administration and faculty. And there's a whole breakdown of folks that sit on that. And we together decide policy for the entirety of the university, which is super fun. Some folks think it's boring, but I think that's one of the most exciting parts of the job, really, is there's a lot of nitty-gritty in that and a lot of language that might bore some folks, but I think it's really exciting that we get the opportunity to really sit down and sort of have a say in what goes on university-wide.
So what's an example of something you've worked on while you were there that you're particularly proud of?
From the student government side, last year there was an initiative started called You'll Be Fine, Wait to Sign, which was an initiative to get students to know their sort of rights as leasers and tenants. Mm. So to get them to understand that once those open leasing dates hit, which are usually super early, you know, like first couple weeks of September, you don't have to sit down and sign a lease right away. There's always going to be properties and leases open for you to sign, even extending into the following year. Like there's still places that aren't being leased or rented out right now as we speak for this current year. So it's a sort of initiative that was designed to raise awareness to that fact, and it opened up a big channel of dialogue between student government, the university, and some of the major leasing companies. So that's sort of how I got my beginning interest in town council, actually, was the initiative was not started by me, but the folks that had started it sort of graduated, and there was a big hole left. So I sort of overtook that, and coming into this year, I did things like meeting with those leasing companies to discuss the recycling ordinance that was just passed, sort of how they were going to deal with that. Were they planning on complying with all of it? Were they planning on raising rent, so opening up those channels of dialogue, which has been super beneficial, I think, to both ISU student government as well as those leasing companies to have those channels of communication. So we're all kind of on an understanding way or platform of what folks are expecting from each other. So that's been one of my most beneficial things. We also just recently, as SGA, passed a new constitution, which as president of the assembly, I was instrumental in sort of working through all the policies. I'm not going to bore you with all the details of the intricacies of our organization, but a major thing that we did was we've always had ex officio non-voting members. So these have been folks that were from other groups like Black Student Union, Pride, APAC, ALAS, mostly underrepresented groups, as well as like Association of Residence Halls and those groups had sat on as non-voting members. And we just recently, after a fight of about 4 to 5 years that those ex officio groups had been wanting and asking and pleading for a vote, we finally passed the constitution where we were able to grant that vote. So that was just something from sort of like a personnel standpoint that I was super proud of. So that just recently passed and is in the process of like getting fulfilled and implemented, but that's a whole nother process. But those are two things that I've been super proud of in terms of from the student government side of things.
I'm kind of embarrassed that I was at ISU for 4 years and all these people like you were working behind the scenes to do all this stuff unaware. I guess it's kind of similar to local government in a way, though, that there's a small core group that pays attention and really geeks out on this stuff. But that, most people just kind of go unaware or maybe occasionally come across something that's annoying to them, but they don't really know exactly where, where that came from. When did you start getting involved with normal politics? Was it the issue with the renters or was it something else that kind of made you more aware of what was going on with the town?
Good question. So that You'll Be Fine, Wait to Sign initiative is what really started me. I really gained interest through that, and especially as an off-campus student, I saw a need for that, for someone to speak and advocate for those folks and what they really need. And historically, they've sort of lacked that voice. So that was sort of the first thing. I'm also friends with a lot of folks that are, through student government, are politics majors and are heavily involved in the community, which I wasn't necessarily up until that point very involved or hands-on. I sort of knew the issues. I was also a news reporter for the Vedette, so I had that sort of perspective of, like, I always sort of had a hand or sort of knew what was going on, but was never super involved in it. So that was really the first time that it took off. And I think it expanded, too, through the election. So the election was huge for ISU students, as well as, like, from a student government perspective, seeing that sort of fiasco that happened at the Bone in terms of three-hour lines for folks to vote and some people being turned away or folks not being able to vote because, you know, they had class, so they couldn't wait in an hour-long line.
Is this the election last November?
Or correct. This past November, yeah. November 2018. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So long lines, big stories coming out of that. So that sort of thing fueled me as well because on a national level, I was really interested in, like, voter rights and stuff like that. So once that sort of happened locally and it impacted, you know, me as well as, like, fellow students, that's what sort of sparked me. And I had a meeting with some folks in the town to sort of discuss how maybe how we could go about changing it, making it a better experience for the students on behalf of student government. And when I had that meeting, it really inspired me, like, hey, maybe, you know, the town of Normal, the Normal Town Council is something that I'm interested in. They have this ability to make life better for folks in the town. And I think that that's something that students should be interested in. And just historically, they're not. And you sort of spoke about how you were, I think you used the word embarrassed, that, like, you weren't as knowledgeable about what was happening behind the scenes. And I think a lot of people feel that way, but that's not always necessarily their fault, right? SGA and the Normal Town Council and local municipal and small government, those sort of structures and organizations, they're sort of at fault too, right? Because they need to convey their message. They need to be surveying folks to make sure, to be making sure that they're making those right decisions, the informed decisions. And it's sort of a two-way stream, and both parties have to be held accountable and have to be transparent. So there's no need for you personally to be embarrassed or anyone else, really. And so that is also a piece of that, is that when I had sort of those meetings and came to that conclusion of, like, this is something students should be interested in, it's also, is it accessible to students? And the answer is not necessarily. And that's a fault of both parties. But you see that there's not necessarily a lack of interest, right? You saw those lines, three-hour-long lines to vote at the Bone because folks are registered to vote here. So it's not like students have a lack of interest in sort of local politics or things that affect them. It's whether or not we're making those things accessible to them.
Yeah. It's interesting that when I was at school, it was Bush versus Kerry in 2004, if I did my math right. And, yeah, I had to wait like an hour and a half to do it, too. So this has been going on a long time. The reaction that I saw from the county clerk's office didn't indicate that there was any real pressure there to do anything any different in the future. I think the answer was just kind of like, well, they can either wait or they can vote early. So it seems like it'll be good to have someone focused on that issue. Logan Smith, do you know him? Who just got elected to the county board?
Absolutely do. He was part of the inspiration that November time, sort of with the voter rights thing that I was really interested in. The other inspirations to me was actually Logan Smith.
For those listening who don't know, Logan Smith was a ISU student who was just recently elected to the McLean County Board.
Heartland. Went off.
Heartland.
Heartland.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
He's a Heartland student. Okay.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Yeah. But yeah, he really inspired me, and we actually, his campaign manager was Angel Zamudio, who is now my campaign manager. Mm. So I did have folks that were heavily involved in that campaign. So seeing that happen, him run and win for county board at 19 was impressive. There was a girl who ran for DuPage County Board, I believe. Her name was Hidea. Her first vote ever cast was for herself. That was an inspiring story. Seeing seeing the average age of Congress drop by, I think it was 10 years, an entire decade. That those sort of things really inspired me because since 2016, you've seen that sort of, I guess, political revolution, folks wanting to get involved. It's inspiring to see folks not waiting, because I think that's traditionally been the path in politics is, oh, well, I have these issues and I care about this, but, you know, I'm not old enough to run yet. I'm not rich enough to run yet. Those sort of things preventing folks from running. And to see that sort of stopping and that narrative changing of, okay, I want something done, so I'm going to go do it because I and my and others alike me believe in that message. So I'm going to go out and do it and not necessarily wait for my time. Those were the things on a national level that really inspired me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you're talking about, you know, the underrepresentation maybe for those groups that you've kind of worked to bring together at the university level. How do you start to think about upscaling that as you know, looking at them as all one population in the greater scheme of the town? You know, what is necessary to bring those parties together?
That is a phenomenal question, and I don't think that there's necessarily, like, one answer to fix that, right? Like, I think that there's an issue in terms of the town and ISU are seen as separate entities, but I think that that's something that, with my candidacy, win or lose, I need to change that. We need to change that perspective of, like, an us and them, and they're only here for 4 years, and that sort of narrative, because that's not necessarily true, right? Like, you see... current incumbent R.C. McBride came here for school, and he's sort of been here, I think, really ever since, with maybe a minor difference here or there. So it matters. Like, folks that come here, they're not necessarily here to just come here and be here for, you know, 2, 4, if they go to grad school, you know, 6 or however many years that they're here for their education. That's not necessarily the case. So I think that a lot of this is just sort of changing the way we think and discuss. ISU is, I believe, the second biggest employer in McLean County. So just that, those right. economic implications, the educational implications, ISU is important to the town and vice versa. And I think just making folks aware of that is that our issues are their issues too. So I think a lot of the questions that I've been getting so far in my campaign are things that are like, am I planning to stay for 4 years? I wouldn't run for a position if I wasn't planning to hold it for you know, the duration of the term.
Yeah.
And also, I get questions of, like, you know, well, they're just students and stuff like that. Do they really care? Like I mentioned, like, obviously they care. You had those lines at the bone because, like I said, folks are registered, and they're registered here. They're not voting back at home. They're voting here. So they care about those town issues. And I think just sort of changing that conversation to students versus citizens, a lot of our issues align. So I keep getting questions about, are you a student first, or are you a citizen of Normal, or, you know, sort of what are you interested in representing? Well, the question is all of that, right? And that's the thing that we need to change, because all the elected officials should be thinking like that. Like, they're asking me, am I just here to represent students, when they should also be asking, are those other citizens just there to represent the normal residents and not students? Like, ask them those questions too, because that's what it feels like to like folks like myself and a lot of students. So I think we need to get away from that and turn it to, are you committed to representing everyone fully, all the residents of Normal, including students?
So we definitely have more to talk about. We're going to take a quick break here, but before we do, we'd like to do something with the guests we have. We have to do a little lightning round going into the break. So what I'll do, Alex, is I'm just going to read a couple words to you, and then you can give me your reaction to them, you know, 1 to 5 words, something like that. And for Normal candidates, I'm telling them if they go more than 5 words, the sound of a train coming through the Normal station will blare and interrupt you. That's a joke. I don't have that sound effect. But anyway, so here we go. Shops at College Hills.
Great.
Mark Peterson.
A leader.
Urban sprawl.
Very dangerous.
Mayor Chris Coos.
Diplomat.
TIF districts.
Good if used correctly. I hope that was under 5.
That's fine. Sorry if it made you nervous. And last one is Portillo's.
Delicious hot dogs.
All right. We'll be right back. And now it's time for Tyson's reflections on life. I used to be somewhat of a social gamer. Used to play Nintendo 64, many rousing bouts of Mario Kart 64. I've gotten back into it now, but I mostly do single-player games. I play them in my house, by myself, usually in the dark. It's in the dark because I don't like to look around my house and see all the work that I should be doing instead of playing video games. What I should be doing is coming over to Play Normal Esports. They've got much more comfortable chairs than I have. They have faster computers than I have. They've got professional-grade headphones that I don't have. And they take care of all of the cleaning, all the food preparation, and all you have to do is just sit down and enjoy yourself playing a game. Play Normal Esports at 802 South El Dorado Road.
Alex, and looking at some of the big items on your platform, affordable housing is obviously one that we've talked about here, and you've done a lot through SGA with. Another big point, bridging the gap, and one of those areas is that you've really been able to learn that is bringing some of those underrepresented groups to the table. Groups, oftentimes you hear people say, well, it's really difficult to reach those groups. That's not an excuse to leave them out, but right. that's oftentimes what you see. How are you able to reach out to some of those? What have you learned through that process at the university that we can really use at a town level?
Sure. So I think the biggest thing is just having the conversations. So there's a lot of like uncomfortable conversations, or I think a lot of the times too, when folks are getting left out, it's folks are just don't have the knowledge, and that's okay. You know, that's the thing that I think a lot of folks have to start to learn and realize is that it's okay to not be knowledgeable on everything, right? A mentor of mine told me, "You don't know what you don't know," which I think plays well in a lot of factors, and especially in including underrepresented groups and underrepresented folks in the town and in the area, is that it's okay to acknowledge that as long as you're working towards being more knowledgeable on it, right? So I think that you've seen the town sort of stride towards that. You've seen like the city welcoming ordinance pass fairly recently, I believe less than a year ago-ish, year. Was great. I think that was great strides. You didn't see it pass successfully in Bloomington, which is a shame, but I think that that goes towards that, right? So far in my campaign, I've been having a lot of meetings with folks that are, you know, community organizers that are involved, county board members, and I think that that goes to be part of that as well, like bridging that gap and bringing underrepresented folks to the table or folks that didn't have a voice is not just in Normal. I think that we need to do a better job too of communicating that with Bloomington and surrounding areas as well, because the city welcoming ordinance is great, but what happens if you're pulled over in Bloomington and they don't have that pass? And that's, you know, if you're a Normal citizen, you're governed under that ordinance, but it's not taking into effect because you were stopped, you know, maybe 6 minutes away from where you live. So that sort of thing is really important, but it just goes to show that you have to sit down and have those conversations, whether you want to or not, or whether you're knowledgeable or not.
Well, in the frame of maybe not wanting to have conversations and bridging that gap, the relationship with Normal and Bloomington comes to light in that. How do you convert that to maybe a group that has been a little bit more hesitant to have those conversations? It's obviously for the health of the community that you continue to press those, but what do you think you can bring with that mindset to that discussion?
I just think that I'm always open, right? So I think that with that, I need to bring that perspective to the town council if elected. And I think that other folks need to start doing that as well. And I hope that I can lead by example in that way, and that even if I am against something, I always think that things are worth the conversation, because they are, because there's a bunch of different perspectives. And you see that in the town now. You know, there's a lot of folks that there are current issues that people are upset about, and there's valid points on both sides, and you always have to be open to listening to both of those points. And that's what I hope I can do, is at least lead by example and having those conversations, whether you want to or not.
Another part of your platform is fair taxation and living wages. So can you explain a little bit more about what you're thinking with that?
Sure. So I think that Normal has taken some great strides in terms of development over the past, you know, maybe two decades or so. It really is a great place to live, to come to college, to raise a family afterwards, and they're making those strides. But I do think we need to be mindful of the cost of living in the area as well. So while it is great for, you know, the... it's great for housing and the housing market to go up, but taxation needs to be sustainable as well. So we can't be treating Normal like it's Chicago or an immediate Chicago suburb per se, because it's just not that, right? Like, you don't necessarily have those same wages and job opportunities, so you need to be mindful of where we're taxing, especially when we're talking about like property taxes and that sort of stuff. Now, raising you know, the sewage by 2%, that's not an issue per se, but be mindful of those larger taxing bodies and what they're doing. And if you're raising those taxes on a larger taxing body platform, you need to be catching up with wages. I think that fighting for, you know, a $15 minimum wage is something that most folks should be interested in. If the cost of living is going to go up, wages need to be supplemental to that so that folks can afford to live, especially when you see a lot of development of more luxury apartments and living, especially in the uptown-ish area. And even for students, the housing market has sort of gone towards a more luxury base, which is blows my mind personally. But if that's happening, wages need to be at a supplemental level so that folks can afford what's happening in their area and they can afford to live in Normal.
So you're thinking of something like a town minimum wage?
Correct.
Is that what you're
thinking? Yep.
Okay. And then, so a lot of, when you're going through the taxes, when you're thinking about that, are you primarily thinking about property tax, like sales tax as well?
Correct.
Too? Okay.
Yeah.
So, trying to, if I can paraphrase, trying to make sure that if you're going to increase taxes, that those who are at the bottom of the pay scale are able to not be left behind if things kind of proceed away from them.
Absolutely. You said that more eloquently than I did.
Okay. All right. So that does get into how the development has been going in Uptown and in other places in Normal. Things have changed a lot since I've been there. I was there in the, like I said, mid-2000s. And all the Normal candidates have their ideas of things that have been good that have changed since then, and maybe things that have gone too far, or their plans that are maybe going too far with things. So what's your perspective on where Uptown has, how far Uptown has come, and then the current plans, what good and bad do you see in those?
I see where Normal, Uptown Normal is in pretty good hands right now. I think we're in danger of possibly overdeveloping in that area. I think you see that with like the One Uptown development fairly recently. You're still having trouble. That bottom floor was supposed to be something like a luxury restaurant. You're still seeing that they're not getting that. And the cost of what it would take to put someone in there probably isn't worth it for, definitely not for anyone locally. And maybe even not for like a national chain. So I think that we're getting into a place in Uptown's development where we might be overdeveloping a little bit. I think building luxury apartments, things like that One Uptown, as well as things like above CVS, I believe it's called College Station, those sort of apartments are also a little bit dangerous, because I don't know who per se is renting out or leasing those apartments. I don't know sort of what that demographic looks like, and it's a little bit hard for me to comprehend who is doing that. And that's where I think that we have to be careful to be mindful that we're not Chicago and we're not a Chicago suburb, and we need to just focus on being normal rather than being sort of what we think those visions should be. We are different, and it's okay to recognize those differences of us between a Chicago or a Chicago suburb. And there are things that make us great and different, and we need to, like, accentuate those rather than trying to force those luxury apartments and that overdevelopment. So I think that we're sort of on that verge right now, and we have to be careful and tread lightly in terms of what our next stages of development look like, especially when it comes uptown.
Mm-hmm. Are those apartments above CVS, are those marketed towards college students? Do you know?
Is it? I believe the majority of them are.
Yeah.
There might be some that aren't, but I believe all of them.
Yeah, they are. Entirely. Yeah. To college students.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting. So there wasn't any kind of grocery store that you could walk to when I lived there. So I lived in Watterson. Mm-hmm. Wasn't anything within walking distance. My car was a really long way away. So, you know, it was pretty tough to get anything other than, you know, like, restaurant food or anything like that. Anything, you know, fruits and vegetables were far away. I guess they had those at the dining center, technically. But for some reason, the Chinese food was always more tempting to me at the time. Anyway, it's nice that students have the ability to walk over that CVS now. I think that's a huge win. I'm just sharing my perspective. Like you said, you don't really make a big distinction as a student between, like, what's normal and what's ISU, right? So ISU is there, but you're in the dorms, and then you want to go do something. You go walk uptown, and you go to Maggie's or Coffee House or Coffee Hound or something like that. You're not thinking, like, oh, well, this is the Town of Normal's responsibility, and I'm, you know, and then you're back on the quad, and you're like, oh, this is ISU's responsibility. It's just all one experience, right? I assume you're nodding your head. I assume you're agreeing with all that.
Yes, correct.
So, yeah, I mean, that seems like a big win in the changes that have occurred there. But, yeah, I mean, there must be some kind of market for certain students to have those apartments, though, because that's what's going up there. That's what's going up on Main Street where Ack and Colby used to be, right? So, I mean, there must be a demographic that's appealing to. But I guess, like, where do the non-luxury apartments reside? Do you have to like drive in then? Are there places within walking distance that people can live that don't cost, you know, $800 a month or something?
There are, and I think that we need to fight for those options. So that's sort of like my main platform is, you know, affordable housing. And I think that that goes like beyond students as well. So from the student standpoint, I think that we need to, both from the student standpoint and residential normal standpoint, I think we need to look into models of development that are more along the lines of developers and maintenance companies all in one, rather than you see certain properties that are like owned by a company that's owned by another and so on and so forth. I think we need to get back to more like local development. And that goes sort of beyond the housing market. But specifically in the housing market, I think that that's really influential because those are the folks that sort of understand the area, and they'll sort of understand that need that now that we have the Lodge and the Lodge 2 and, you know, the College Station above CVS, stuff like that, maybe we need to focus more on that low to mid-range level of housing. And I think that's what I'm fighting for students, but it goes beyond students. Like affordable housing, I think the most neglected sector of folks in Normal, in my opinion, is non-student, non-homeowners. So who is fighting for the rights of folks that are renting with the same leasing companies that students are? No one, right? Because no one's fighting for student leasing rights, really. So they're definitely not fighting for those, you know, families that live in townhomes or are renting with these same sorts of leasing companies. They're really getting neglected. So that affordable housing goes beyond student apartments. It goes into townhomes. It goes into really fighting for mixed income housing. That's what the model, I think, needs to be, rather than, you know, building a bunch of new, really pretty homes. That's great. But we need to focus on folks that can't necessarily afford that, or that don't want that. You know, not everyone wants to own a home in Normal. There are families, like I said, that are living in the same sorts of complexes that we are. And I think that those folks need a voice as well. And that's what I hope to be able to bring to the town council should I be elected.
Yeah. So we talked a lot about ISU and Uptown, but Normal's a lot bigger than both of those things. So what are some of the issues that, you know, if you look at the broader town, that you want to try to tackle?
So I think sort of my second point to my campaign is bridging the gap, which sort of goes into economic development in the area. So I think that there's a lot of issues with, so like I said earlier, a lot of folks will view students as just a four-year commitment, nothing beyond that, you know, nothing more, nothing less. But I think that that's just kind of a false narrative, right? Like, for me, it's easy as a College of Business major to see a lot of folks getting jobs with, like, State Farm and Country Financial, right? Because those are staples and, like, that's catered to a major. But there are folks, you know, say, like, a social work. That is sort of something that I think is lacking. It's harder to find jobs here. You see a lot of those folks, like, mass exiting to suburbs or Chicago where there's more funded mental health initiatives and stuff like that, where they can get those sorts of high-paying jobs. So I think creating more economic development beyond bringing in companies like Portillo's and stuff like that and giving them huge tax breaks, we need to focus on maybe giving tax breaks to small to mid-level businesses, local folks, entrepreneurs that are able to, like, build and expand and sort of offer, like, internship and job opportunities to folks post-graduation. Then you create a harness of community that is not seen as ISU or Normal. You're bringing those two together, and you're creating a more economically prosperous area. So while Portillo's is great, and, you know, I grew up in the suburbs, so I love Portillo's. You know, I couldn't live without their hot dogs, and I was so glad when they moved here. I think moving towards, you know, building that model of small to mid-level business growth is what we need to move towards.
Yeah. Well, I'm an economic development guy, so I appreciate hearing that. I think one of the things that we hear a lot, too, as far as bridging the gap, is there seems to be a disconnect there between students looking for more opportunities, whether that's internships, whether that's actual jobs after they graduate, and employers saying that there's not enough skilled or qualified workforce there. That might be a million-dollar question if you have an answer to that, but how do we start to work toward maybe getting the information? As a marketing guy, that's a big key.
Yeah, I think a lot of that, too, is partly, like, changing the conversation. I think there's a lot of jobs that you see where there's, like, experience required for, you know, entry-level sorts of positions, and mm-hmm. I think that that's an issue, and I think that you sort of negate that once you start giving or bringing in more small to mid-level businesses and entrepreneurs, because they're not looking for that. You know what I mean? They have criterion, but they're not like, you need 5 years experience in this industry, that sorts of things. They're more willing to hire folks that they see fit their business model. And I think that that's really important because, you know, like, I'm going to get the questions of, you know, what sort of experience do I have in city planning and stuff? The answer is I don't, right? But where does anyone else get it? They get it by getting on these commissions or by getting elected to the council. And so you see that sort of narrative even in politics, really, right? Like, what experience do they have? Well, they're a first-time candidate. What do you expect their experience to be? How do folks get to be experienced? You know, they have to have those sorts of things. So mm-hmm. that's what I think is changing the conversation. But I think that happens once you start to have smaller to mid-level businesses and entrepreneurs come into the area that are looking to hire folks just based on their skill level, their merit, and how they would fit within the business model rather than how many years of experience they've had.
Well, we're getting kind of close to the end of our time. Is there anything that you really wanted to talk about that we didn't get around to chatting about? Any closing thoughts that you have about your candidacy, what people should know about you?
Sure. So I think the biggest thing is to just sort of fighting that student-led narrative. So everyone's going to see me as a student, and I can't really fight that. But I think that with the discussions we've had today, y'all have seen firsthand, and I hope that other folks that listen and I meet with in the future can sort of see that these policies aren't just for students, right? Like, I want to fight for those folks that just feel like their voices haven't been heard. And I think increasingly you're starting to see that in the town of Normal. Like, you have the project, like the Trail East project, where folks feel like their voices aren't being heard and they're voicing their opinions and the town council is still sort of voting against them. And while there is substance to saying, you're not going to make everyone happy, there's also clarity and transparency, which we sort of talked about at the beginning of this, is just sort of making sure you're hearing everyone. And you see the same thing with possible building of that new fire station, right? Like, there was a lot of public comment. There was email campaigns from folks that lived in that area sort of discussing that. And while there is need to sort of decrease that response time in the fire department in that specific area of Normal, there's also substance and validity to saying, did it have to go specifically right there, right? There's a lot of, like, unplotted land that you sort of could have diverted that maybe away from the home. So if folks are concerned about the noise, which, you know, that's sort of here or there, whether there's truth to that or their property value, you can sort of dilute those things by having those open discussions and dialogue. And that's what I'm hoping folks can see, is that I'm not a one-trick pony. I'm not here just for students. Overall, I want to improve all of Normal, and I think the biggest key to that is just hearing folks out, where they stand, what issues are important to them.
Yeah. If people want to find out more about you, where can they go?
My Facebook page is Alex for Normal Town Council. I have an Instagram as well that's sort of like linked to the Facebook page, so you can get that there. And I'll be knocking everyone's doors so they can hear more about me once I start doing that.
All right.
I have a Gmail if folks are interested in just asking me questions or getting involved in the campaign, which is alex4normal@gmail.com.
Well, Alex, I know we enjoy some deeper engagement in the community, so we appreciate you coming on with us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks a lot. All right, Alex Campbell. Really enjoyed talking to an ISU student. I have not kept very close ties with ISU, and so it was really great for me to hear that the school is strong, that they appreciate having the what's going on in Uptown Normal, and that he's trying to get more people involved.
I think there's a big conversation there that he's highlighted that we're trying to engage with on a community level, and I always like to see how the Normal Town Council, in this case, you know, after these elections take place, how they are able to engage some of those discussions, because no matter who the candidates are and where they're coming from, they have valid arguments. So that's certainly something that I'm looking forward to over the next few months, how that becomes part of not only the existing comprehensive plans that they have, but how that continues to shape our community for years to come.
Yeah. Well, we want to make sure to thank our sponsors, Lil Beaver Brewery and Play Normal Esports. Lil Beaver Brewery, as I mentioned, is a great supporter of ours and has been very encouraging, both financially and morale-wise, for us to keep doing this. So big thanks to them. And Play Normal Esports and Normal Gadgets here on El Dorado Road. Come and support them because they support us. Well, thanks a lot for coming and doing this with me today, Zach. Justin is going to be spending the night in his car tonight to raise awareness for homelessness and raise money for Home Sweet Home Ministries. So as important as I think this podcast is, I think it's important for him to be doing that too. So thanks for filling in with him.
Yeah, happy to do it, and good luck to Justin. It takes a brave soul out there in this weather. Yeah.
All right, are we done?
I think we're done.
But before we get into that, we would like to thank our sponsor, Little Beaver Brewery. Little Beaver is down by the old... Dang it. See, I told you I have trouble
Little
with
Beaver.
These.
Little Beaver.
Someone told me that I'm saying Little Beaver, where it's actually Lil Beaver.
Little.
So that's what I'm doing right now.
Yeah.
So
semantics.
Picky.
It's like a little Sebastian from Parks and Rec.